to Sideburns, part of the Third Degree Burn podcast family. In this episode, we are continuing the coverage of X-Men Hidden Years with issues 15 and 16. In the show, we're exploring the run of the book written by and drawn by John Byrne. I'm John Hyatt, here with Nigel Spink. Hey, Nigel.
Hi there. How are you?
Good. I'm doing great. Man, it has been a busy summer, and people who listen to these later on will not know, but it's been a while since we've done our last show.
That's true.
And I apologize. It's totally my fault. I have been super busy, but I am thrilled to be back here with you now.
Okay. Yes, I'm glad that we can carry on with the run of X-Men The Hidden Years.
Yeah.
And as you say, we're doing issues 15 and 16
today. Yeah, we're nearing the end. We're in the last half of the series. It only lasts 22 issues. So here we go.
Okay, so you're going to start us off with issue 15, I believe.
I will, absolutely. So we've got a wonderful cover of Angel holding a blonde woman floating in the air. And this is X-Men Hidden Years number 15. It's written by John Byrne, penciled by John Byrne, inked by Tom Palmer, colorist Gregory White. The letterer is John Byrne, editor Jason Liebig. Editor-in-Chief Joe Quesada was released in December of 2000. The only other work that month by John Byrne that I could find anyway was Marvel Lost Generation number one, which was the end of that series.
That's right, yeah. The backwards series,
We have an interesting little connection to that next issue, which I'm sure you'll bring up, and we'll talk about it more then. So it was 32 pages and cost a mere US dollars, $2.50, about half what a book costs nowadays. It's called Death Be Not Proud. And here's my little short synopsis with the assistance of FanWiki. Kind of just took it and the basics for that, and then just kind of filled it in a little bit, made it a little bit more personal. So Cyclops, Angel, Marvel Girl, Candy, and Avia return to the X-Mansion, where they are greeted by Havoc, Lorna Dane, and, surprisingly to them, Iceman. They explain to the returning X-Men, they being Havoc and Iceman. Actually, Iceman does it. Iceman explains to the returning X-Men that Professor X sent Havoc and Lorna to the Savage Land to search for them, and Iceman, quote-unquote, overheard the telepathic message and decided to go out on his own. And we've covered that extensively. Amy is taken to the medical room where she is connected to a bio bed for healing. Hank arrives a little later and says that Professor X is staying in Illinois with the recently revealed mutant Ashley Martin and her mother. And then we jump to Worthington Manor, where the team, minus Alex and Lorna, have gone to sort out the pending marriage of Angel's mother to his uncle, who, as the villain, the Dazzler, not that Dazzler, murdered his father. Left behind, Lorna disguises herself and and makes a trip into Salem. There she is being watched by three people who somehow know who she is. One of them appears to steps out and appears to rescue her from a stumble, engages her in conversation, then asks her to go with him to have a coffee. It appears that she is being telepathically influenced when she agrees. 9 hours later, Lorna returns to the school where Alex is waiting for her. Alex is a little bit surprised that she had been gone so long, but Lorna is offended because she has the feeling she's only been gone just for a couple of hours. Well, Alex doesn't want to fight about it or dig any deeper, so instead he tells Lorna of a plan to find the mutant which Cerebro had detected in the Himalayas. Back at the Worthington estate, Warren finds himself in a dilemma. He wants to prevent the marriage between his mother and his evil Uncle Bertram. That's an evil sounding name if I ever heard one. But to do so, he needs to reveal Bertram's past, which, according to the family doctor, could kill his mentally fragile mother. Even Marvel Girl is helpless because Bertram can somehow defend his mind against her telepathy. To make matters worse, Dr. Stewart, the family doctor, also is in cahoots with Bertram. He provided Warren's uncle with a special tea, which will slowly kill Catherine. But to Dr. Stewart's dismay, Bertram has been increasing the dosage of the poison, and he fears that Catherine might die even before the wedding. As people get dressed and get ready for the wedding, Catherine faints. Dr. Stewart says she's just exhausted, but Hank recognizes a bluish tinge around the edges of Catherine's lip, something that Dr. Stewart should have mentioned. Suddenly, Bertram bursts into the room wearing his Dazzler costume and attacks the X-Men. Cyclops, however, had gone undercover behind a couch and blasts Dazzler out the window with his optic blast. Then Angel takes over and beats his uncle to a bloody pulp. The X-Men restrain Angel from killing Bertram. Jean shuts down the power of the Dazzler. Afterwards, they confront Dr. Stewart, who outs himself as another mutant hater. Poisoning has gone too far, and Warren's mother is dying and cannot be saved. As she slips away, she sees Warren with his wings exposed and thinks he has become an angel to take her to heaven. In a final act of love, he carries her into the sky until she breathes her last death. End of the issue.
Oh, yeah. As portrayed on the cover.
If we
just go back to the cover. Yeah, it's a great picture, that. I really like that one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, we don't know. Just by looking at it, we don't know who it is, but by the time we get to the end, it's, and actually it is pretty much the same panel.
Yeah,
the
season. It's in costume, yeah. That's very nice to cover.
Yeah, what did you think of the issue overall? Or do we want to go over the cover and look for the hidden number?
You can do that. Have you found it?
I did find it this time, right, yes.
Yeah. Where is it?
It's down on the lower left above Byrne. It actually looks like a face, but it just says anyone in the clouds.
Yeah, it does. It does look like a face. Yeah, like a funny...
I thought it was just him being goofy, you know, and
yeah,
scanning it and turning the book around, and I was like, oh, there it is.
Yeah, yeah, because I'm going to say, maybe that's how I first saw it. I can't remember, but I probably thought, oh, look, a goofy face in the cloud. Oh, just a minute. 81, there we go.
Yeah. Well, I had to count up. I'm like, okay, what number am I looking for? Oh, there we go. So...
It's quite easy to see, really, if you just scan around a bit.
Mm-hmm.
The whole picture is very nice, and the color, I like the background. It goes well with the, you know, the contrast of the colors of his costume and his wings and everything.
Yeah, very much so. It really makes the rest of it stand out and bring so much meaning to the image there.
One thing I wanted to mention, just as you were reading off the list of who does what in the comic, and I noticed it on my issue as well, actually, and you didn't mention it. After Greg Wright, the colorist, it's also got, as well as Jason Liebig, who's the editor, it's also mentioning a Lisa Hawkins associate editor.
I forgot to put that in there. You're right.
And in fact, in the next issue on the list of who does what, it only has her name for the editor, even though when you look it up on Marvel Wiki, it still says it's Jason Liebig. So maybe she just stood in on her own for that issue. I don't know. Anyway, not a big deal, but just thought I'd mention it because it's there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad. Thanks for bringing that up, because she should get the credit for doing the work that she did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And the first opening splash page is a nice one with the ship.
Yeah.
The X-Men home.
Great little thing. And then we just jump right into. Now, it's been so long since we've been to issue 14. Didn't we end with them already at the Worthington Estate? We did, didn't they? So we're kind of
the other group. Yes. So we're kind of going back a bit here at the beginning of this to the guys coming back from the circus thing with the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants finale. And I wondered if you were going to say something in your synopsis. You know, at the bottom of page 2 where they meet Iceman and they're saying, all right, we didn't expect to see you here, kind of thing, because he's supposedly left the group. And then he starts asking loads of questions. And like underneath on the bottom, I don't know whether are they like editor's notes or if these are the answers that are being given to him by Cyclops. But all the answers are there, but not in speech bubbles. They're just like written at the side of him.
I think that's the editor. Yeah. old-fashioned editor notes because the little asterisks are in the bubble, speech bubbles next to his questions.
Oh, they are, yeah, but they're very light, aren't they? I miss those, yeah, because that's what I was looking for. I was looking at it last night and I thought, now is it? Because I don't see those little asterisks that usually say, you know, it's an editor's reference. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they are, but they're so light. Yeah. I missed them, yeah. Yeah, but I like the way the answers come straight away after each question. So where were you?
That was clever. I like that too.
Yeah, and I like that one with why is Candice Southern in Jean's costume? So that no one will recognize her while she's with the X-Men. And then the last one, why is Jean in her school uniform? Originally because she had no clean costumes, which is correct. Now, nostalgia. I like that.
Yeah.
I'm a big one for nostalgia. I prefer that costume to the... the green one that Candy's wearing. Yeah, that was good, the way they kind of just caught Iceman up by answering his five questions.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, and then who the heck is that? Avia.
Yeah, and I'm thinking Bobby's like, oh, another girl I can try to date.
Maybe. although she's got no arms.
Yeah, I know. That's gonna...
only wings. Yeah. That was good. And then Candy got a bit... she was just checking with Warren, you know, do I need to be jealous of this looking birdie? And then it's back to what they could call the present with them in the at the wedding venue.
So at the end of our last episode, I thought that I had recognized, remember they had that layout of the mansion, the Worthington mansion.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you thought it might be something from a TV show. Yeah.
And I did try to do some reverse images and looked up a bunch of stuff, and I really couldn't find anything direct. Not as clear as Jean's parents' home being the Bewitched house and that Candy's apartment being the friend's apartment, those kinds of things. So it does bear a lot of resemblance to Collinswood from a soap opera from the 60s and early 70s called Dark Shadows. And Collinswood is based on a actual castle house as well. So it's not an exact duplicate of it, but there are elements of it that are, to me, similar enough that it may have been drawing inspiration. I don't know. But anyway, I just want to read that. I did do my homework. So, yeah, a lot of talking this issue, a lot of people sitting around in chairs. Doesn't really get a lot of action until the end. So there's a lot of talking and a lot of big group shots, I find, to tell the story.
Yeah, yeah. But it helps to, I mean, it works, for the story. Yeah, we need to be filled in on everything, which we're learning a little bit of a little bit at a time. About Bertram and a bit of Warren's past that we didn't know about before,
So anyone that gets all onto Chris Claremont about being too wordy, just read this issue. And
sometimes it's necessary to be wordy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then we jump into Salem, and there's Lorna with a blonde wig. So I'm clueless as to who these three people are. They kind of, but if you look at the three in the panel, it looks to me like it's Alfred, Bruce Wayne, and Dick Grayson standing there.
Yeah, I'd not thought about that at all. Yeah, that never crossed my mind. I can see the Bruce Wayne and Dick Grayson. I don't know about Alfred with that guy, with him being bald and a little bit of a fat-faced guy. He looks more to me like, I don't know, some sort of Asian bodyguard.
No. Well, I'm just saying, you know, older man, you know. Like, just kind of like that. So, but it does seem like this person has some superpower of some sort, telekinesis and telepathy. Not sure. And I don't remember.
Oh, yeah.
It's been 20 years since I've read this. So this is going to be a new reveal to me.
I'm not sure what exactly that power is, but it seems like, he just keeps saying now.
Uh-huh.
When he says now, whether it's to himself or out loud, it's not clear. And then whatever it seems he wants her to say or do, she does it.
Yeah.
And so he's like total control over her whenever he wants it.
Yeah.
Mystery
for the future.
Yes, these are an interesting trio. And who are they? And he gives his name, doesn't he?
Yeah. Carter.
Ted Carter,
yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, that's obviously a subplot for the future.
Another quick turn back to Worthington.
To the wedding. And, Bertram sticks the knife in a bit more by asking Warren to be his best man.
I know, yeah. Plot thickens with, you can't say no because I'll kill your mother, your poor dear mother.
Yeah, gotta play the game. Yep. And then the X-Men are still thinking about what can we do.
Mm-hmm. Jean has tried to do something, but
yeah,
it's fun. Well, I guess she just didn't suspect Dr. Stewart, which is why she didn't probe. But I would think that she would have picked up a stray thought of him being his little subplotty self, but not doesn't make the plot go well.
He's up to the dosage of the poison.
Yeah,
in his mother's tea. Yeah,
It's quite diabolical that.
Oh, and the doctor's not very happy about that, saying, you run the chance of killing her before you get married, kind of thing.
Yeah, because that means he's going to lose out on whatever cut he thinks he's going to get. Interesting how he could just I could understand that he hates Warren because he's a mutant, but this woman is someone that is supposedly his friend and he's just willing to see her die. It's terrible.
But maybe that's because, as Bartram says at the bottom of the page there, if she's not dead in 3 days, he will be. So yeah. He's gonna kill the doctor if it doesn't work the way he wants it to.
I got news for Dr. Stewart. He was gonna be dead anyway because I don't think Virgil would let him live. At the loose end.
Yes.
So that doc was doomed no matter what he did. So back comes Lorna. 9 hours later, that's a heck of a long time to be gone. What was happening?
She thinks she's only been gone for about 2 hours or some.
Quite an odd thing. But Alex has been busy getting things suited up. And I like how they're like, well, they just abandoned us, so we're just going to go do what we want and forget them, which I think I would be kind of miffed too, but I understand like Lorna does, but it was not very nice of the X-Men to just leave them out like that.
And then off they go to Shangri-La, as Havok says.
Yeah.
As Alex says, they're going to check out the Himalayas.
Yeah.
And then it's back to the wedding for the finale.
Yeah, we find more diabolical stuff. All of the staff have been fired and replaced by new people, which is shocks Warren a bit. And then his mother faints or, staggers and collapses. So it's like, oh, okay.
Then do you think that new butler looks kind of sinister?
The what? Oh, the
butler on the top left.
He does look there.
He looks a bit like Peter Cushing, I think.
Oh, you're right. He does. And whenever Peter Cushing shows up, it does look diabolical. Dr. Stewart gives a little examination, and as we heard in the synopsis, just, she's just a little weak, too much strain. And then Hank points out that he should have pointed out the telltale sign of poisoning, which is blowing lips. But before they could think about it, in pops Mr. Dazzler, not that Dazzler.
And dazzles them all.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. How does this power work? I can't really remember, because he just seems to be shining brightly and they can't look at him. But does it automatically nullify everybody else's power, or is it just that they can't look at him? Because I'm sure somebody there's got a power that doesn't require them to sort of really look at him to do some, some damage to him. Like, I mean, can't Hank just sort of hurl himself, for example, in his general direction and hit him or some?
I would think that why it didn't happen initially was because they were just blinded and reacting to the blinding, and their brain is focusing on that and not letting them think about anything, because Jane could close her eyes and then even though she can't read his mind, she can sense where he is and then tell him he's telekinetically, yeah. I'll take them out.
I guess it's just a case of in still picture form as it is. It's like four panels of him dazzling, if you like, and nobody seems to be able to do anything. And yeah. I guess this is all happening in like what, say, really about 2 seconds. Or something, mm-hmm. mind you. Although with the amount of words he's saying yeah. in those panels, it must be more than 2 seconds. But yeah, it's probably not very long at all.
Right.
But it seems it when you're looking at each panel and thinking, well, they're just getting dazzled and they're not doing anything.
And I'm so, really not so sure how his power works. It must be from that belt,
possibly.
Because, he doesn't have the power. As a mutant, so...
No, they said, I think they thought he was a mutant, but he's not.
Yeah. He's not.
And then, of course, Cyclops is clever enough to leap behind the city when he came in.
Yep, and gives him a big old blast.
That's a good one, straight through the window.
And then on the next page, I really love that panel of Warren where he rips his shirt off and angry, and the wings are up, and I could just see like a hawk or an eagle ready to prey, you know. It's very, very cool.
Yeah, he's mine. It's like it's like a Wolverine reaction, isn't it? He's
definitely
mine.
And we see sense a bit of, I'm gonna use the word savagery, but just anger that I don't think I've ever seen Warnick before. I mean, and I understand it, you know, this is his mother, and I'd be pretty upset if anyone hurt my mom too, you know. So these two full pages of this battle are really quite intense. And I think Bertram at some point was probably like, dang, I bit off more than I can chew. Because it's relentless. He doesn't have any time to think about how to use his power, because it never turns back on.
Yeah. He never gets a chance to do that. And he just gives him a good old beating. Yeah.
But it is interesting, because on the next page, you know, after they pull Warren back, Jean says, I was able to look in his mind and lock his power. So he must have some element of a power, even though Doctor said no, he's not he created it all with science. So there's a little bit of a disconnect there that I'm not sure what's going on. What do you think?
Yeah, true. Like you say, he's because she couldn't read his mind at first, but then the doctor said he wasn't actually a mutant.
Mm.
Yeah, as you say, he used science, but don't know, because he never goes into detail. Maybe he had sort of learnt to close off his mind somehow.
Yeah. Oh, well, I have to look.
But it seems like his power of the light, the dazzling effects, came from, like you say, maybe the belt, the suit, which he might have created himself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and at the bottom, Dr. Stewart is down there. We don't know what he's trying to do. I guess save her long enough to maybe save his own skin, but it's too late. He can't. Gene has figured out the plan.
He can read his mind, so he jigs up. And then, of course, he's confronted by Warren, and he suggests, he's another mutant hater.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he just wanted to get rid of Warren because he's a monster.
Yeah, it's interesting that they got duped by this. This is sort of like a prequel to the X Factor, where all of them were created in X Factor by Cameron Hodge. Cameron Hodge, they thought it was an ally, and then he turned out to be a mutant hater as well.
Yeah.
It's like a duplicate of the story idea here. It's just like, I would think Warren should have been more aware of this when he X Factor is like, wait a second, this sounds a little too, I don't trust people who say they're my friends anymore. But it's too late for dear Catherine. Yeah.
His mom.
Poison is too much in her body, and she thinks Warren's an angel.
Yeah.
Take her to heaven, and knowing that she only has a short, very short time, he accommodates by giving her a lift into the sky so that he can be with her on a very private private moment. Yeah. Ooh. The look on it, the expression on his face at that last panel is also very sad. You can feel the and on too, it's same on the cover. Just you can see that it's a look of sadness and despair.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But yes, a very moving end.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. We get a hint next, the echoes of a
lost generation.
So
yeah, and that's that. And
that's that. Very good
issue. Yes, a good issue. Yeah, it's sort of like it's finishing off a few old plots there with the X-Men coming back. And that's the end of that story, of course, with the wedding. And we've just got one new subplot started with the strangers who sort of picked up Lorna, as it were, and took her for a coffee for 9 hours.
Mm. Yeah, that's a lot of coffee.
Yeah, I just want to.
So excited to get going on a new adventure. She's all wired.
I just want to mention the back cover of this particular issue, simply because it's an advertisement for the Spider-Man game.
Okay.
I've still got it. I had this one on PlayStation.
Oh, do you? Okay. Yeah.
Well, no, I have the game still. I don't have a PlayStation anymore. Yeah, but I played this one. It is good. Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know whether you ever played this one.
No, I didn't.
I enjoyed it. It was good. Yeah. The best superhero game ever, it said.
Oh, excellent.
And it was good. It was good. Yeah. I used to enjoy playing that one. It says there, you don't just play it, you live it. Yeah. I say I've still got it, but I don't have a PlayStation anymore. And it was only PlayStation 1 at the time. It might have been okay for PlayStation 2. I'm not sure. When did PlayStation 2 come out?
I have no idea. I
can't remember. Anyway,
never had a PlayStation. Yeah.
I don't think mine would work on anything that they make now. So
yeah, that's not going to be very compatible.
But I liked the picture as well. That was the cover of the front cover of the game box. Yeah, it's a very good picture of Spidey crawling up the side of a high-rise building.
Mm. Super. All right.
And that concludes issue 15.
Let's move on to 16 then.
So, X-Men The Hidden Years, issue 16. It was a cover date of March 2001. Although, as I noticed recently with these comics, the cover date itself of the month no longer shows, does it?
I noticed that myself when I was looking at what was the cover months, and I was like, they're not here. I don't know how long they've been gone. So that's why I didn't include it. I was like, well, it's not on the cover. I'm going to mention
It's like, if you didn't know or you can't look it up, you wouldn't know. But anyway, it's March of 2001. The release date was the 4th of January 2001. And the usual suspects on the creative team, writer, penciler and letterer, John Byrne, inker Tom Palmer, colorist Gregory Wright, and this editor, I've written them both down here, Jason Liebig, and associate editor is Lisa Hawkins. She is actually the only one mentioned on this particular issue. Editor-in-chief, Joe Quesada. did you see how my tone went down there?
Yeah, I did.
Editor is a chuff, EIC should stand for you. And the title of this issue is Echoes of a Lost Generation, which we know that's what they said at the end of the last issue. And I am taking the synopsis straight from the Marvel Wiki because it's pretty good. Yeah, I checked it out with what was in the pages and it pretty much covers everything. So here we go. Cyclops, Beast, Iceman and Marvel Girl are back at Xavier's School for Gifted Youngsters. Cyclops is furious because his brother Alex and Lorna flew off to the Himalayas to search for a mutant detected by Cerebro all by themselves. As the video message left by Havoc already is 8 hours old, Cyclops decides as the X-Men will go in search on a mission for his brother. This is a good idea, because when Havok and Lorna reached the Himalayas, their airship crashed down after being hit by a flying rock. Warren Worthington III and Candice Southern are still in Long Island as the police take care of Bertram Worthington, and the corpse of Warren's mother is being taken away as well. Both Bertram and Dr. Stewart would like to tell the police that Warren is a mutant, but Marvel Girl put a blocker into their brains before she left, so they are unable to actually speak those words. At the same time, an unknown person breaks into Xavier's school. In the sick bay, the man meets Avia, takes out the mute girl with a quick hit to the throat. In Dunphy, Illinois, Professor X is still watching over the young mutant Ashley Martin and tries to make Ashley's mother, Terry, comfortable with the situation as well, while policemen clean her garden from sentinel fragments. Ashley is suffering from a slight headache, but Xavier assures Terry that this is not a result of his telepathic surgery. Meanwhile, the X-Men's jet reaches the Himalayas and suffers the same fate as the airship of Havok and Lorna. As the X-Men climb out of the crashed jet, they immediately recognize their rock-throwing attacker as Yeti, a member of the superhero team called First Line. This is a shock to the X-Men, as all the members of the First Line are believed to be dead. As the X-Men fight Yeti, who is totally out of control, both Alex and Lorna wake up in a ruin nearby, and besides them lies the corpse of a female Skrull. Then, the battle against the Yeti is broken up as he suddenly turns to stone, thanks to the arrival of the Inhumans and Pixie. The latter, as well a member of the First Line, Pixie does not offer many explanations, but Yeti obviously was romantically involved with a female Skrull, and he was guarding her corpse here in the mountain. Most other members of the First Line died preventing a Skrull invasion, which was kept secret to not unsettle the population. When the X-Men return to their man, none other than Kraven the Hunter is waiting for them. To be continued.
Wow.
And so that sets up the next little installment. But yes, so first of all, let's have a look at the cover of this issue, which shows the said Yeti, or Abominable Snowman, charging forward, and he's got hold of Cyclops already, throwing him to one side, and all the other X-Men are turning in shock at the Yeti charging forward, because they were looking at this corpse of a dead Skrull female, which is sat in a chair at the right hand of side of the cover here. And it's like, whoa, what's going on? Yeah. Who's this? Who's that? Where are they?
Yeah.
What did you think of this?
I like the cover. I was kind of like, what's going on with this? It is a little bit dark, so it made some of the stuff a little hard to see, but I was like, wow, okay, this is going to be something else. I didn't recognize this Yeti person. I had no idea, or this character at all. So, you know, I thought, okay, this is kind of like a Sasquatch story.
I was going to say, even if you don't know, it's like, oh, this isn't an Abominable Snowman, no doubt. Yeah.
So, and intrigued by the Skrull corpse. Okay. Of course, it's hard to tell if it's a Skrull here on the cover. So you're just kind of like, okay, it's a mummified of some sort. But yeah, interesting cover. Draws you in. You're like, okay, what's going on here? So Cyclops taking one, a pretty good hit there. Did you find the number very easily?
Yes.
I did too.
Okay. I'm going to say, I thought you were going to say, I didn't. And I'm going to say, what?
I did find it. Yeah.
So there it is. Yeah. Right in the middle of the page, really. Yeah. Between the figures of Yeti and the X-Men, you've got like a post that identifies the entrance to a mountain temple, which is what this place actually is. And on the side of the post, a bit like a milestone. You can see it does say 82, the 8 above the 2. Yeah.
At first I thought, oh, this is going to be hard because it's so dark.
Yeah.
And then I found it, and I was like, oh, thank goodness. It wasn't that hard.
Yeah, hiding in plain sight, really.
That yeah, one. Indeed. Indeed.
Right in the middle of the page where you can see it. Yeah, so it's getting easy, you see, isn't it? This number.
Yeah, it's kind of like
number finding. Compared to what it was earlier.
I think maybe because we're in the 80s, it might be a little easier because of the, you have to have two circles on top of each other. Whereas with a 7, you could almost make that anything. So, but yeah, so I'm hoping it'll continue to be a little bit easier. A little bit of a challenge, but you know, not so hard like some of them. Well, you said you've, haven't been able to find two numbers, so
well, it's down to one now because I think as I mentioned in an earlier episode, one of the ones that we just couldn't find, it's because when they'd resized the picture to use as the cover, they'd actually cut off the bit where the number was. So, you know, you weren't going to see it because it wasn't there anymore. Yeah.
All right.
Are you still there? Oh, I thought I'd been cut off there.
No.
Right. So
we are right into the action, starting with Cyclops. And I like that John Byrne is keeping Cyclops's visor the old style. He hasn't been tempted to update it or upgrade it to the Cochrane version that we got later, which, you know, so he's doing really good about keeping it to that the old style of the visor that we had back then.
Yeah, which I suppose, you know, seems right because we're back before the Cochrane era, aren't we? So
yeah, being updated. I mean, the clothing and stuff. So I can see a temptation to make adjustments, you know, and even the technology. I mean, the bio bed and all that. So, you know, the technology. He's avoiding the temptation to make a change. And I think that's good.
Yeah. But I think I read somewhere that Byrne didn't really like Cochrane's fancier visor anyway. So even though he continued to draw it in a similar way on his original run in X-Men, you know, with Claremont, he did sort of make it less flamboyant than what Cochrane had done. He kind of toned it down a bit.
Yeah, yeah.
I liked it, but then I tend to like those sort of things. When I first saw Cyclops in the all-new X-Men with that visor, I thought, oh, yeah, fantastic. That's much better than the old one. But not everybody liked that. Yeah. I did like Cochrane's bigger, sort of fancier visor, yeah.
Me too. Mm. All right.
So, yeah, he's not very pleased. He's not pleased with Havok and Lorna taking off on their own. So it's like, let's get after him because it's 8 hours since he left that message. So anything could have happened.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Of course, we find something did happen. There's Lorna out on a snowscape somewhere. Surprised that she hasn't frozen to death, considering where they are. But yeah, there she is. We get a quick recap of their journey there.
Yep.
Wow. I love that she's in this costume. I love this costume of hers.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess we still don't have a code name, Polaris, yet for her. But the ship gets taken out by a giant rock.
It's like an asteroid.
Yeah, it does. It's quite
the size of that, yeah. I'm surprised it didn't do more immediate damage.
And down they go. Yeah. But Lorna is awake and Havok is nowhere to be found. So where is he?
Ooh.
What happened to him? Why would he wander off and leave her there? Because she was just laying on the ground. Or what happened? Did he get dragged away?
And then she finds the entrance to the temple. She goes in.
And a scream.
And then she screams, or somebody does.
Yeah, somebody does.
And, of course, they cut to a different scene. Yeah, back to the Worthingtons' estate, where they're taking away Warren's mother on a stretcher, and Bartram, and the doctor are all tied up there.
Waiting. Yeah, they're trying to expose the secret.
Yeah, but try to tell the police that Warren is a, and they can't get the rest out. I like that. I said, don't you know they can't say it. Yeah, thank goodness Jean put the inhibition in their mind. Yeah, but yeah. Warren's thinking, but how long will that last?
Yeah, and then cut back to Westchester. We've got this sneaky person that kind of looks like Wolverine, but now that I know who it is, I can see the clues.
I was gonna say, actually, the second panel where he's coming in through the French windows is a giveaway, really, on his left leg.
Yep.
The well-known pattern of his costume gives it away straight away to anybody who knows enough about the comics. Yeah,
he really did give Avia a big chop on the neck, didn't he? It's like, whoa. poor thing. I mean,
she's in the wars a bit, isn't she, one way or another? She's always captured or knocked out.
She doesn't get a break anywhere.
No.
Yeah.
So he subdues this Avia creature, and that's it. And he's obviously going to use her as a bargaining chip. But why? What's going on? And back to the Himalayas, where the rest of the X-Men are just getting there, flying above the mountains.
And then they get taken out as well.
Yeah, another big boulder takes their ship out. And one of the engines gets put out of action, and they must land as well.
And this is where it gets into, we get this great panel of
Yeti.
He looks like someone's in for trouble there.
Yeah, they leap out of the ship, and it's like, wow, this. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, so you say you'd never come across Yeti before.
No.
I hadn't until I read this. This was the first time I ever saw him myself in this particular comic. So, because I thought, who's that? And then, of course, it was sort of given that he's something to do with the Marvel, The Lost Generation, which I'd not read at the time. But then I found out further that he actually first appeared quite a long time ago, because he appeared in Fantastic Four, number 99.
Oh, really? So
he's actually an Inhuman.
Okay.
Yeah, but I'd never read Fantastic Four, number 99. So, I didn't know about him. Those last few FFs by Lee and Kirby, I never read them. And I only just recently, when I was with you guys earlier on this year, I finally got hold of the story from, is it number 90 to 93, where the Thing got taken to the Skrull world where they were all acting like gangsters. Yeah,
that's a good story, Ron.
Yeah. And I'd never read that either. But I've always thought I wanted to read that. So I bought that while I was with you guys. But they're the only issues in the 90s that I've ever read of FF. I've not read the rest of them up to Kirby finishing.
Okay. Well, that leaves you with something still to look for.
It does, yeah. So, yes, the Yeti, just Yeti. That's his name.
Mm. And we're back in Illinois. Professor X has been staying with the Martins. And we got quite a lot of damage there at the back of the house. And then Ashley is none for the worse here, and just a little interlude. I know I do recall that we'll get more of Ashley later on in the series.
There's more of, there's more to come. He's going to stay there for a bit longer yet, Professor.
Yeah.
And he's just...
And right back into the battle. Nice big battle sequence here, which is really nice.
Right, yeah. Trying to avoid or overpower Yeti,
But I was very confused at this point in rereading it, because I had no idea what they were talking about. I actually had to read the page twice.
Because
it's not connected to Lost Generation at this point.
Hank keeps mentioning the first line, Marvel Girl says that, and then Iceman says, but he's dead, they're all dead.
So it was confusing, so I figured it had something to do with something going on at the time, but I just didn't put those together, and I should have, that it was Next Generation or Lost Generation, but figured it out a couple of pages later.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say it's a crossover, but it's not a crossover with Lost Generation, because the Lost Generation story itself had actually finished the month before, as you pointed out when you said other stuff published by Byrne that month, and it was the last episode of the Lost Generation, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So this is actually after.
Yeah. This is like an epilogue.
Yeah. And it's, yeah. But yes, Yeti is still alive, obviously, and fighting mad. They're trying to stop him. Beast's having a go at him, but then he gets grabbed and he's swinging Beast around like a rag doll.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, yeah, Lorna's coming to again inside this temple this time. And then she finds Alex. Yeah. Havoc's on the floor in the temple. And then they see something over in the corner.
And again, and it's another quick.
It's like, what's that? And then change of scene again back to the Yeti battle. And they're wondering still how to overpower him.
And he's looking quite.
He's gone completely like.
Quite insane, yeah.
Yeah, crazy. Savage.
Yeah, savage.
And then dust cloud and he's turned to stone. Yeah. It's not the Grey Gargoyle.
That's when it clicked, because I saw the pixie and I knew she was part of the Lost Generation. And I'm like, ah, okay, this is a connection to that.
Hmm.
That's when it clicked. But it was great to see the Inhumans back.
Yeah, so there's Pixie with you. Black Bolt, Medusa, Gorgon, Karnak. Yeah. And it's like, but Pixie is an Eternal, I believe, yeah?
I thought she was an Eternal,
yeah, she is. She's an Eternal.
Why she's hanging out with them, I don't know.
Well, Yeti is, because Yeti is an Inhuman, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And they're both connected to the First Line. Pixie and Yeti were part of the First Line. So I guess they've sort of stayed in touch.
Yeah.
Or maybe she's kind of looking after him. And then we get a bit of a recap of, oh, there's a picture there of the First Line or some of them.
Yeah.
With Yeti charging forward. And Pixie's in that as well.
Mm-hmm.
She's behind. She's at the back there. And then it tells you about the... There was a one called Rapunzel who was a Skrull female. And, he obviously...
So then she got killed.
Yeah. And then, or did she just die? It said she'd been dead for a long time.
Well, at this point... Well,
but they did have a kind of romantic relationship, I believe.
Be an interesting story to find, unless it's in issue one. I don't know. I know that Brian wants to go over Lost Generation.
Yeah, have you read it?
Third Degree Burn, it will come up.
Yeah. Have you read it?
No.
No. I've read it, yeah. I've read it now. I read it after I got back from America because... it was one of the things. You know, did Tim actually give you one of those little...
No.
What do you call them?
the
different things.
I think I have it in a Burn collection, the Lost Generation.
Yeah.
I think like the Marvel collection of John Byrne's works. I think it's in there. If not, I'll find it and I will eventually get to read it.
Yeah. It's interesting.
When it came out, I wasn't that interested in it because I'm like, do we really need this? But I can see because there's so much time has gone, you know, like we're in the 2000s now that I could see that, maybe we should have something going on. But we'll get into all of that when we finally do get to it on Third Degree Burn, or unless someone else takes a side burn journey down the Lost Generation.
Yeah.
That'll be fun. Yeah.
And so with everything sort of briefly explained to the X-Men as to who Yeti is and what he is and what happened back in the day, they leave again. Yeah.
Because it's kind of a quick wrap up on these, isn't it?
Yeah, because they realize Yeti is in good hands, as it were. You know, the Inhumans are there, and he's a member of the Inhuman, and that's it, really. He's not a mutant, so that's that. And then off they go, head back home. Yeah,
there's exposition to explain everything and what they got going on, and then that's when we get the reveal of who infiltrated the mansion.
That's it. Final panel. Yeah.
I like the enough. It's like, I'm tired of listening to you guys.
Yeah.
I'm here. Give me an opportunity to jump down and attack you. Talk too much.
And Beast knows who he is. Even the hunter. And he goes, oh, good. You recognize me. That will save time.
Yeah.
And then he says he's going to kill Avia unless one of you stands against me. Which one?
And why? We'll have to see.
Mm.
little detail of Iceman icing up and all of his clothes freezing and breaking off. Did you notice that?
Yes. Oh, yes. Yeah. Last panel. Yeah. And actually, down at the bottom where it gives you the title or one of the titles, maybe, it says, "I'm the return of Tom Palmer." So he didn't actually ink this one. I think Byrne must have done it.
He must have, because
That would be why Tom Palmer's name was not on the first page. Yeah. He was having a break. Well, it still looks pretty good, doesn't it? The artwork still seems to resemble the previous issues, even though he's not inked it. Well, Byrne's obviously inked it, I would say.
Well, that's what I would think.
So he's obviously been able to do it in a similar way, which I'm sure he can. Yeah. A Neil Adamsy, Tom Palmery look. Yeah.
Well, good. There we go.
And that's it. Down. To be continued.
And two. There's also
another little message, but it's cut off on my page. I can't read the name fully. Dedicated to the memory of
Parks.
Carl.
I would say Parks.
Parks. Yeah. Carl Parks. Who's that?
I don't know.
Who? I don't know.
Brian will probably know. Well, that's Brian.
Carl Parks. So yes, there we go. That is issue 16. A nice little one and done issue.
Pretty much. Good.
This one is pretty much contained just within this story with the couple of just checking in on Professor X once and, of course, showing us Craven just getting into the X-Men mansion, just a couple of pages there. Other than that, it's all part of the same story. Starts and finish in the same issue. Yeah.
Yeah, sort of a little... Where are they now to the lost generation kind of thing? So, excellent. Well, good stories.
Yeah, good reads, yeah.
And, good reads indeed.
Artwork is as nice as usual, yeah. I really like the artwork in this run.
Yeah, it's very good. And definitely he's doing very well at keeping the feel of the original X-Men with their costuming and the way they use their powers and everything. I like that. It's good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So... Looking forward to The Hunter and the Hunted.
We'll see how that goes. We'll do that
in the next episode.
Next time, as Andy Leyland would say, next time.
Next time. Yeah.
Great. Well, good stories. I enjoyed reading them again, mostly because I'm pleasantly surprised by all of them. So it's a lot of fun. I know I say that every time, but it is nice to be able to read them
This second half of the run, I don't remember as easily as the first half. So yeah, rereading them again is good. Yeah, I can't remember everything that happens in these last few issues.
Excellent.
Yeah, so...
You want to take us out, or do we have any announcements? I don't think.
I don't think I've got any announcements as such, but...
Well, the only thing that has come out was, and I know we've talked about it on the main podcast, I believe, but the actual physical printing of the Elsewhere series is
going to be I thought that's what you were going to mention. yes, that was a nice bit of news. Have you ordered your first copy?
No, not yet. When I do, it's going to be through the Comic Ferret with our own Dave
Thomas. Oh, yeah, right. Yeah. I've ordered the first one through Amazon.
Oh, okay. Will you be able to get it in Japan there fairly easily?
It seems so. That's why I looked on Amazon co.jp when, about a week or so after they first announced it, just to see if, there was actually any mention of it, and there it was.
Good.
So I thought, oh, okay, then I'll put in my order for the first one, because I didn't know whether I was at first. I thought, oh, shall I get it or not? Because I thought, is it going to be expensive? What's it going to be like? Do I really want it? And then I thought, yeah, I've got to have it because it's it's going to be all completely finished and coloured and
inked and everything.
And some of those. Earlier stories that he did, that let's say in the first 12 or 15 issues that he did, there was some good stuff.
Savage Rendering, it was nice.
So I thought, I want them. Why not? And well, I mean, even in the others that he did after that, the artwork's going to be great. I just thought that some of the stories, they kind of lost their way.
Because he
got carried away, and it were like, where's this going, or is it ever going to be concluded and stuff like that.
Yeah,
there were still some good, you know, good individual issues and things and stuff happening. I just thought there were too much towards the end. There were just too much Phoenix all the time.
And
I was like, oh, not again. You know, we've he's already gone off in a different direction. Like, and Jean's back, and but yet Phoenix keeps coming again and again. So.
I'm glad you can get it. That's nice.
Okay, so where can our listeners find us?
Well, they can find us on Two True Freaks Network. Mm-hmm. And they can email us at gottagetburned@gmail.com. They will post this on our Facebook account, Third Degree Burn, and you'll be able to find us that way.
Yeah, that's probably the best way to touch quickly is through the Facebook account, Third Degree Burn. Okay, so until next time, I have been Nigel Spink.
And I'm John Hyatt.
And thank you for listening.
Yes, we'll see you next time.
See you next time. Bye.
Thanks for listening. You can find us and many other great shows at tutufreaks.com. That's TWOTRUEFREAKS.com. Third Degree Burn is spelled with the number 3, RDDEGREEBYRNE, and is part of the 22 Freaks network of shows. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Just look for Third Degree Burn, spelled with the number 3, and Burn spelled BYRNE. Compliments, complaints, and recipes can be sent to gottagetburned@gmail.com. That's GOTTAGETBYRNED@gmail.com. Drop us a line and tell us how we're doing. Till next time, this has been Third Degree Burn.
Some men aren't looking for anything logical, like money. They can't be bought, bullied, reasoned, or negotiated with. Some men just want to watch the world burn.